Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. And my guest today is Gila Sversky. We're back talking about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Regular listeners know that this is a core issue of this program. For one reason, it's so important. For another reason, it's entirely blacked out, at least in the U.S. major media, a little bit less so in Europe, but pretty much blocked out there. You get better coverage in Israel than you do in America, where they simply do nothing to criticize Israel, no matter what it does. Well, we do it all the time on this program. Let me tell you about Gila. Gila is the Israeli-based co-founder of the Coalition of Women for Peace. It's an organization that she describes as one of the country's leading feminist voices for peace, and she was active in it until 2007. She currently co-chairs the Bet Salem, I'll spell that in a little bit for you, the Bet Salem Israeli Information Center for Human Rights in the Occupied Territories. And she explains that the word Bet Salem in Hebrew means in the image of. And, of course, that means everyone is created equally in the image of God, but you'd never know it from the policies of government that favor one group, demean or vilify, or worse, to another. And that's not exactly the way things should be, but it is all the time. Gila, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Steve, for inviting me.
Oh, I'm delighted to have you on. Bet Salem is very important to me. Let me just give them your website. Bet Salem is spelled B as in Baker, T as in Tom, S as in Sam, E L as in Lenman, E M as in Mary, .org. Oh, it's a site I go to all the time, Gila, and I've quoted Bet Salem so often. I get email alerts from you, and I get some printed material in the mail. I don't know how many times I've written about Bet Salem, but it's a good, good number of times. So my readers, people who read my articles, they certainly know that I talk about Bet Salem often enough. So my hat's off to you for what you do, and we need everything that you possibly can do, and others like you.
Thank you very much. We're actually very, very, very careful with the data that we publish. We check it and recheck it and triple check it. So you can count on any data that you see on the website.
I think you have added credibility, Gila, because, dare I say, you're a Jewish organization, but you report very honestly and as accurately as you can on what's happening in occupied Palestine. And it's not the kind of information that you would get in news reports in our major TV here, Gila. And you were born in the U.S., right?
Yes, I am. Was.
So you've lived in Israel for an awful long time now. And you went to school there, too.
Yes.
Well, I guess you went to school in both countries. Is that right?
Both countries. I graduated Brandeis in Massachusetts. And then I moved to Israel. I've been here 42 years.
Oh, you've been there a long time. Well, I grew up in Boston, and I know Brandeis well. Oh, I thought about going there myself. I believe it began in 1948. Is that right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Well, I started college in 1952. That music means we have to take a break in 1952. And the only reason I decided, well, maybe I shouldn't go to Brandeis because it was such a new university. And I said, maybe I ought to go to one that's been around a little longer. So I take another one.
I take a chance.
Let's take a break, and we'll be right back, and we'll continue the discussion.
They say 50 is the new 40. I like that idea.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Gila Sversky. We're talking about occupied Palestine, the work of Bet Salem. you know, I'm on your page now that says about B'Tselem, and I'm going to let you talk about it, but I'll just kick it off, and right at the top it says that B'Tselem was established in 1989 by a group of prominent academics, attorneys, journalists, and Knesset members, Knesset being the Israeli parliament, and you endeavor to document and educate the Israeli public and policymakers, really everybody, about human rights violations in the occupied territories, and so on and so forth. But you're there, and you're a co-director, and you know it much better than I do. Explain your work and what you're doing, and maybe what you may be focusing on right now.
Okay. Let me say I'm a co-chair of the board, together with Professor David Kretschmer, a law professor at Hebrew University. The director is actually Jessica Montell, who herself originated in the States, in the Bay Area, and has lived in Israel also for many years. B'Tselem is involved, as you said, with monitoring and documenting human rights violations in the territories. You know, when we first were founded, at the time of the first Palestinian uprising, it was quite shocking to Israeli society when we would publish a document or a booklet saying how the rights of the Palestinians had been violated under occupation. And it always hit the first page of all the newspapers, and people talked about it, and our parliament discussed it, and it became part of the public discourse. But now, 20 years into publishing these reports, we're discovering that they're falling on more and more deaf ears and less interest to the media and others. So we're now looking around for new ways to get past that that obstacle, that block that people have to hearing about things that we in Israel are doing wrong. And we have explored a number of new strategies to overcome those blocks, some of them actually quite successful.
Oh, I'm eager to hear what you have in mind, because this is a major problem in my feeling on so many issues, Gila, whether it's what we're talking about today or all the major issues, war and peace, human rights, civil rights overall, basic social needs of people in the countries that we live in, but all across the world. I mean, these are basic issues that need to be discussed.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the state of the U.S. media, it never was a wondrous thing to behold. It always fell so short and never did its job properly. But over the years, you haven't lived here for a great many years. Over the years, it just continually deteriorated, and then some years back, we got cable TV. My goodness, I was a sophomore in high school before my family ever had a television set, so I grew up as a boy in the age of radio, and then a TV set when an evening newscast was maybe on one channel, we only had about three, a 15-minute newscast. Well, I think they concentrate. I don't remember it that well, but I think they concentrated on whatever news they could cram into 15 minutes. I still remember the guy who was the anchor on the program. But now you've got round the clock so-called news and information. The only problem is you get no news and information. You get.
As you were talking, I was comparing in my mind the Israeli media, but. And the Israeli media in general do convey much more news and information than the American media. But I was recently in the States, and I watched some news programs in the evening, and I saw a couple of newscasters who were amazingly critical of what they saw around them. Someone named, I think, Rachel Maddow, something like that.
Oh, I don't know who that is. Is that a local person or a national person?
This was a national person. Maybe I have the name slightly off. Rachel someone. It was, I think, NBC.
Mm-hmm.
either NBC or CBS. I always get them mixed up. But there were two newscasters, anchors, on this same network, and they were the exact opposite of what I had seen on the Fox News network, which was so right-wing and uncritical of the right-wing position. And this was exactly the opposite, rather progressive, liberal at least, and critical of policies that I would be critical of as well. So
well,
I was pleasantly surprised to see that.
You're talking about social issues as opposed to policies of the Obama administration?
Of course, they were very pro-Obama during that campaign and very anti-Bush. But then again, everyone was anti-Bush finally by the end.
I monitor a little bit of our dominant media, our corporate media, Gila.
Uh-huh.
And I am pretty appalled. I do it because I do some media criticism. I write as well as do this. And it's pretty appalling to me. The main voice around the world, the main media source that has the most influence worldwide is the New York Times. And the New York Times is more a propaganda sheet than a news reporting sheet. It is very painful. I get more accurate information, Gila, from Haaretz than I will ever get from the New York Times. I have done numerous media critiques.
Mm-hmm.
Hanging the Times on their own words. I quote them.
Yes.
Explain what's going on, quote what they say in their own words, and show that they just plain lie. We might never have had an Iraq war in 2003 if it hadn't been for the New York Times. Judith Miller.
The media in general had played their role.
Oh, they played their role as I call them the closest thing there is to an official ministry of information and propaganda, state ministry. We're in a totalitarian state. They have an official ministry, Gila. Well, we don't have that officially, but the New York Times is the closest thing we have to that, and I'm appalled by it. But, of course, that's what they do, and the others do it, too, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and I quote them often when I'm writing different things.
Mm-hmm.
Including writing about occupied Palestine. And again, I get more accurate information from Haaretz,
right.
A prominent Israeli paper, and you can get it in English or in Hebrew. I don't read Hebrew, so I get it in English. And they have some wonderful people like Amira Haas, who was just arrested because she used to live in Gaza, and she went back, and she crossed the border back into Israel, an Israeli citizen, and she was arrested. Well, they let her go. Haaretz reported it.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that you don't know the Rachel Maddow show. I just found it on the website of NBC, MSNBC.
Oh, MSNBC? I confess, I never watch MSNBC.
Okay.
Well, that's a cable
show,
channel.
You would be very pleased. You would be really pleased.
Oh, well, I will have to look her up online and see just exactly what she does. There's a little here or there that trickles through, Gila, but overall, if you watch some of the more prominent named people in their programs, I know one coming to mind for me is on CNN, Lou Dobbs.
Yeah.
Well, a couple of years ago, I wrote an article about him, and I called it CNN's Vice President of Racism. He just does disgraceful reporting. He runs a propaganda hour. Some of the most outrageous stuff that he puts on the air. I don't want to talk about things other than Israel-Palestine, but in the little bit of monitoring that I do of him, he doesn't really do anything on Israel-Palestine. And when he's critical of the administration, it's not the way I would be critical. I want to be critical of what needs to be criticized, and I don't want to criticize the wrong things or do it in the wrong way.
Right.
But they do it all the time.
Yeah.
Usually supporting the right-wingers against what they call a more liberal policy. Well, there's nothing liberal about Barack Obama, Gila. I will say that emphatically. There is absolutely nothing liberal about him. He's George Bush's third term with a little bit of minor tinkering around the edges.
I think I would adopt the policy of waiting and seeing. I mean, he's been in office only 3.5 months or so.
But he's given away trillions of dollars to criminal bankers. He proposed the largest ever military budget in world history. He wants to reduce Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid benefits. My goodness. He's done a lot of damage in 3 months, Gila.
The jury still has to be out on him because he inherited a really difficult financial situation, and he's squirming in every direction to try to get past that. And the fact that he fed all the wealthy bankers and tycoons is bad, but perhaps and if that manages to pull the economy out of the doldrums and cut down on unemployment, that would be a good thing.
Well, unfortunately, the healthiest thing that we could do, I get a lot of top economists on this program who tell the truth, the healthiest thing we could do to revive our economy and world economies isn't to bail these bankers out. It's to shut them down and put them out of business or break them up into small pieces and return the country to community banking, local, small, and get them out of the casino capitalism business and require that they go back to being banks. And an even better solution would be to make banking a public utility and let it only do banking. And there's a lot more involved, too, but that's a different topic we talk about all the time. He's doing exactly the wrong things, and I have very distinguished people come on this program, Gila, and explain it much better than I can. So what he's doing is exactly the opposite of what he should be doing. But if he didn't do it, unfortunately, they'd kill him. I think it literally comes down to that. Oh, my goodness, we need to take another break, and I want to get back to Beth Salem.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Gila Spursky of Beth Salem. We're ranging all over the board, Gila. I didn't expect to say anything about the economy today, but we got into that a little bit. But let me come back to what we really need to be talking about. I'd like to mention one thing. There's a new UN report out that you're probably familiar with. It hasn't been published yet, but the one that came out on an investigation of Israel attacking UN sites during Operation Cast Lead, the war on Gaza last December, January.
Uh-huh.
But it seems very tepid. I have a London Guardian page on my desktop, and it seems very tepid. The headline in the Guardian report, dated May 5th, it says, UN report accuses Israeli military of negligence in Gaza war. Well, there's no negligence involved in what they did. We're talking about war crimes and crimes against humanity, and negligence has absolutely nothing to do with it. They knew exactly what they were doing. Negligence would be that you may have tried, but you didn't try hard enough, and you made mistakes, and you really goofed. That's what negligence is. That's not the issue. So I don't know what kind of a report this is. And then, of course, Israel objected. So apparently the UN is backing down a little bit. Is that what's going on from your knowledge?
I have not read the report. I read the headlines. I read an article about it. And B'Tselem has not taken a position about that report. We are trying to get the Israeli government to set up an independent mechanism to investigate the Gaza reports, some mechanism that would be acceptable to the Israeli government and still outside the military framework. So far, the investigation of the Gaza war has been done by Israeli military, and that, of course, is ridiculous to have military people investigating themselves. So our efforts have been to push Israel to setting up an independent mechanism. Now that the UN Council has established its own commission for investigating under Gladstone from South Africa, we are hopeful that the Israeli government will cooperate with this commission. They have not yet said that they would not cooperate, and that would be good. We feel that Goldstone is a fair, decent person, and has credentials in investigating apartheid in South Africa, is himself Jewish. The terms of the investigation are to investigate both Israeli violations of human rights and Palestinian violations of human rights. So we feel that the setting is correct, and we're hopeful that Israel will cooperate with it.
Oh, indeed. I am very skeptical. I think the Israeli military operates like the Pentagon in the U.S. There are an awful lot of Pentagon-committed crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan, and when something is bad enough, it can make headlines, not for very long, but it can make headlines. And then the military always issues a statement like, we will be conducting an investigation on this. And then always they end up whitewashing it, just the way the Israeli military does it, the IDF. They will whitewash it. So they've basically absolved themselves for what they did to Gaza in Operation Cast Lead.
Yeah.
And as you know, Gila, a fair number of Israeli soldiers, including, I believe, some officers, came forward, and they said they were given direct orders to commit what amounts to war crimes, to shoot civilians, innocent people, including women, children. There were snipers all over the place, and they would target people clearly, no threat to anybody, and just shoot them dead. They would go into homes. They would take over homes. If people were in the least bit not cooperative, they'd kill them, or beat them, or do whatever they wanted to them. Certainly scare them to death.
You're quoting testimony that was given in an informal situation at a military college, and that was leaked to the press by the commanding officer of this group, who felt that these stories have to get out. These stories may very well be true, but they really do have to be investigated in a proper setting. Just as a court of law ensures that there's careful interrogation and cross-examination, these soldiers, too, would have to be speaking from direct experience and not from hearsay. Some of them did speak from direct experience and some of them from hearsay.
Some of them spoke about what they went through. Past military soldiers talked about their experiences in the past, not what went on in Gaza this time. But a good number came forward and said exactly what they were told to do. That's pretty credible stuff. And each one seemed to corroborate the others. There wasn't a great deal of divergence.
There was not a real careful setting for that kind of cross-examination. I would really not rely on that those articles that came out with those tapes. I would rely on the reports of field workers for various human rights organizations, and I would rely on the Gladstone Commission. That looks promising. But let me take a step back for a minute and talk about Gaza. Do we have time? Or
We need to break again.
Okay.
You continue as soon as we come back, Gila.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Fine.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Gila Zversky of B'Tselem. Gila, pick up where we had to break.
I guess the main principle I'm advocating is that there should be a careful and systematic investigation of what took place in Gaza from the end of December 2008 through toward the end of January 2009. Some of the facts are quite clear. We know that there was bombing. It appeared to be indiscriminate by the Israeli Air Force. We know that many civilians were killed. We have what we think is an accurate count, and it is disproportionate to the number of people who were killed. In one family home, for example, the Eldaya home, 21 people were killed in that home alone, 13 of them children. So we know that there was a disregard for civilians during the course of the shelling. We know there was failure to protect medical teams and hospitals, which is also required by international law. During the combat, hospitals were hit, medical teams were killed, ambulances were disabled. We know that white phosphorus bombs were used with some horrific consequences. At least 14 civilians were killed because of the use of white phosphorus, seven of them children. So many fires were set by those bombs. These are some of the things that require much more explicit, detailed, and careful documentation. Also the harm to the civilian infrastructure. So we cannot do it so long as the Israeli government prohibits our entry into Gaza to observe and interview people. As you know, as you just mentioned, Amira Haas, one of the primary journalists sending information from Gaza, was recently arrested, released on bail, but arrested and will be charged for entering what they have termed an enemy state, which is probably the first time that Israel recognized Gaza as a state. So there are ways in which we can be gathering information and getting to the truth, but we have not been able to so far. I hope the Gladstone will be able to, and I hope Israel cooperates. But until such time, we really can't make very explicit and detailed with numbers conclusions about the extent of the human rights violations that took place. On the other hand, we can, of course, put numbers to the human rights violations by the Palestinian Authority in Gaza by sending its shells deliberately into Israeli civilian cities. And that, of course, we are more aware of and also condemn.
But what Hamas does, Gila, is strictly in self-defense. And look at what's going on.
Not self-defense.
It is self-defense. They don't launch these rockets preemptively. I mean, I've written dozens and dozens of articles on the conflict going back since 1947, at least before 1947, but mainly around that time frame. And there's so much evidence over the 6-decade-plus long period of the most extreme and outrageous Israeli war crimes, primarily against the civilian population. And look at the adversaries involved when there are adversaries, predominantly a civilian Palestinian population. Israel, this tiny country with a population about the size of Chicago, let's say, has the world's fourth most powerful military, nuclear armed, with the most sophisticated, powerful weapons. And they attack a civilian population crowded, densely crowded in Gaza. There's no way you could avoid massive civilian casualties. And they attack them with F-16 aircraft, with helicopter gunships, with high-tech tanks, with all kinds of weapons. And what does Hamas have? They have automatic weapons. They have homemade rockets.
You know that I do not fail to criticize Israel for all those things. I just went through some pretty horrific numbers about what Israel did in Gaza. But by the same token, you cannot and should not ignore the shelling of civilians, the suicide bombings that are directed at civilian populations that are carried out by Palestinians. In order to have any sort of credibility, not to mention decency, you really have to criticize both sides. I'm not saying they're equivalent. I'm not saying there's moral equivalence. I'm not saying that they have been equally successful. Israel's probably killed four times as many Palestinians as Palestinians have killed. But you still can, under no circumstances, justify the killing of innocent civilians, the deliberate killing of innocent civilians by Palestinians.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. There's just no question about that. Now, there hasn't been a suicide bombing in a good number of years, and they never began until, I'd have to go back and check the timeline. I think in the early 1990s, as the frustration built up, and then this began to happen. For so many years, the Palestinians never did anything like this. But when people resort to be willing to die for something they believe in.
There were plane hijackings for many years.
I'm sorry?
There were plane hijackings by Palestinians. There were plane hijackings, and some of those planes were blown up, and many people were killed.
Oh, there were instances of that. That goes back a long time, but there hasn't been any of that in many, many years as well.
Right, because of the careful security operation. And there has been no suicide bombing in Israel because of the horrible separation barrier that was built by Israel. So there are measures that Israel has taken and that other countries have taken. Some of them have been very successful measures to protect civilian populations. And some of them have been illegal and wrongful measures to protect civilian populations. But in both cases, they've been successful.
Well, we both believe in the same thing, Gila. We believe in peace and equity and justice. And if all sides followed the same ideals and same principles, we could have a wonderful world. Israel could be very secure. If Israel would only decide they want to follow different policies. I have a hard time looking at a civilian population, whatever they might do that at times indeed is wrong. I have a hard time wanting to blame them first. I want to look first at the powerful force, the powerful state, whether it's Israel, whether it's America, whatever it is, and they first have to be held to account. Let's get that end of it straightened out. It's like a parent and a child. Well, let's first take a look at what is the parent doing that may make the child be naughty. Let's examine that first, and then after we do that, we can take a look at the child.
They know adults, and they know the difference between good and bad, and I don't think that we can let anyone off the hook, not the Israelis for what is being done that's illegal and immoral, and not the Palestinians either. Yes, we have to look, we have to condemn more the more powerful body. By the same token, though, we cannot ignore what is also being done against innocent Israelis.
But there's no comparison between the two. There's no comparison whatsoever. Over the years, Gila, there have been many, many, many thousands of Palestinians killed. There's a handful of Israelis killed, and very few. There were no Israelis killed prior to the onset of Operation Cast Lead.
Since 1948, over 20,000 Israelis were killed since 1948 in various wars and acts of terrorism.
Well, then there must be 140,000 Palestinians that have been killed. I mean, the numbers are enormous.
I mean,
this goes on and on, whether we're talking about the number arrested with no charge, torturing prisoners in prison. I mean, this stuff goes on all the time, but you get no reports about it.
Are also arresting without due process and, in fact, executing some.
Indeed. Some of that does go on. I absolutely agree with you, and it's wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong to do it to one. To commit one crime, you're as guilty as if you commit 100 crimes. Murder is illegal, torture is illegal, and it doesn't matter whether you do it against one person or 1,000 people. It's illegal, it's wrong, it should be punished. I agree.
Then we're in agreement.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Again, we're working for the same thing. We want the same thing to happen. And I feel very strongly, Gila, I think the key may be the Gordian knot to really working for overall Middle East peace is to solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And I honestly believe that unless we can do that, there will never be peace in the Middle East. But if we can do that, then everything else in the region is possible. So that's the thing we have to work on.
Yes, I agree with you completely. And I'm hopeful that Obama will use his influence and power to apply pressure on Israel as well as the Palestinians to sit down and negotiate a compromise that will be good for both sides.
I indeed hope you're right, but I have followed Obama so closely. I've written so much about him on so many issues, and I must say, at best, I am extremely dubious. Extremely dubious. I would say the chance of that happening is so slim that I would want to make a personal apology to him if he does what I never expect him to do. I really believe that he 100% supports Israel and what Israel wants, within reason, Israel will get. I do not think that we will support a war against Iran, but I could be wrong on that because Israel wants one. I think it's such a reckless act that even forces here in this country, including the Pentagon, want nothing to do with that because the whole Middle East will go up in flames. There's a big enough mess there right now. We don't need another war against a country that can fight back. So I don't think Israel will get that, and they've wanted it for a long time, and they haven't gotten it. But they've gotten pretty much everything else, including what they're doing to the Palestinians. Obama, if Obama really wanted to do something right, he could lay the law down. I mean, my goodness, Keila, the funding that we send to Israel every year in billions of dollars, in interest-free loans, even before interest rates went to zero, in the latest weapons and technology, my God, we literally could lay the law down and say this is the way it's going to be, or else. And Israel would have no choice but to go along with this important stuff.
No, I don't think so. I think if anyone tried to push Israel into doing something that Israel felt was against its best interest, Israel would say no to $3 billion worth of weapons and look elsewhere for its, the patron of its client state.
Oh, well, there'd be lots of countries willing to sell them, but I don't think too many countries would be willing to give it away, Gila. We give it away free.
Excuse me, it's not free when it is $3 billion of a grant to Israel for purposes of purchasing American-made arms.
Oh, they don't, those billions are a gift.
Not just to Israel, but it's a gift also to the American military industry.
Oh, well, there's no question about that.
It's not giving it away, it's also in support of the American economy.
Well, I could think of better ways to support the American economy than by building weapons. We could do a lot of things that are economically stimulating, but we don't do them. We choose militarism, which is a very bad way to stimulate the economy.
All I'm saying is that Obama does not have the ability or the power to force his view on Israel or Palestine or anyone.
Well, he could do a lot, Keeler, I honestly believe.
Oh, yeah, he can do a lot, and I'm hoping he will. And I'm actually counting on him to do it.
Oh, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. It's true. He's only been in office a few months, but I wrote a very stinging article on his first 100 days versus Franklin Roosevelt's first 100 days. And I must say, just judging the two of them on that time frame, 100 days, 3 1/3 months, absolutely mirror opposites. So different, right straight down the line. Well, there was no militarism under Roosevelt at the time. We sure had it later on, but we did not have it in the early 1930s. So I couldn't compare on that basis. I did it economically. But the Roosevelt plan was just vastly, vastly different than what Obama did. Roosevelt was far from perfect. Oh, my goodness, he could have done it so much better. But considering what he did and what Obama has done so far, it was shamefully different, but that's another issue. But if he goes along a path different than the one I think he's pursuing, or changes or whatever, I will be the first one to apologize, and I will write about it and put my name on it. That's a promise.
I hope he disappoints you.
Well, he won't disappoint me. I will be delighted, as you will. Because we both want responsible government. We want government doing the right things and helping people, not hurting them. And I would like nothing better than to be writing articles championing a government that really is doing this. Nothing would give me more joy than to do that.
Yeah, well, look, Obama does have influence. I mean, no small influence, serious influence in the Middle East. Netanyahu will be visiting you soon, and I hope he will sit him down and explain to him how it's in the interests of the world that Israel begin to negotiate a fair peace for the Palestinians. So that's my hope, and I think we all have to work to explain to Obama that that's what we want. And
indeed, we
call on him to do it.
Oh, absolutely. Public pressure calling for the right thing. One thing that's very important for me, Gila, is the global BDS movement, boycott, divestment, and sanctions.
I'm opposed to that movement.
I think it's awfully important. It worked in South Africa.
Yes, but it was very different. Things were very different in South Africa. I'll explain to you why. First of all, I'm opposed to the entire concept because it's collective punishment. It is punishing the innocent at the same time it's punishing the guilty. And the second reason I'm opposed to it is because my belief is that it will push the moderates into the arms of the extremists, the right-wingers. The moderates will see that the world is putting pressure, boycotting Israel, and it will start joining the ranks of the right wing, feeling under siege by the rest of the world.
But there's not a lot of difference
reasons,
now.
That the boycott, the sanctions, the divestment policies are when their blanket policies are counterproductive. But I do feel that selective boycott of the settlements in the territories, I believe that is very smart, and that can be very effective.
Well, there's no question that we need to target the policies that are causing so much harm, certainly the settlements, the land theft of Palestinian land, the wall that needs to come down, so many things.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Gila Zvretsky of Beth Salem. The website again, betsalem.org, BTSELEM. You can read about their work. They have reports. They have data carefully put together, and they do a wonderful job. Absolutely, go to the website and review the different types of information they have. And as new information breaks, they will post reports. You can get on their mailing list, too, and get email alerts to find out what's going on that concerns them. But, Gila, we just have a few minutes left. I want to give it to you to wrap up with your final thoughts.
Well, I guess my final thoughts have to be human rights thoughts. And those are that if you want to have a credible critique of Israel, as I hope we have, then you have to be very careful with the numbers you use and with the sources you use. And you ought to be also looking at the entire context of the problem, not just at a single incident. And that's, of course, I'm saying that not at all in defense of Israel, but also in condemnation of some of the context in which Israel has operated. So I guess I would leave it with have your information marshaled and rely on reliable sources.
Oh, I certainly go along with that. But you will agree that Operation Cast Lead, the attack on Gaza, the UN Human Rights Council called that attack in its severity and the damage and deaths that it caused, their words, unprecedented. What Israel did in that 22-day period, it was pretty horrendous. We can quibble about the exact numbers of destruction and deaths and injuries.
It was horrendous. I wouldn't say unprecedented considering world history, but I do say that it was horrendous and should not have happened, and I hope will not happen again, but I don't count on it.
Oh, I wouldn't count on it either. I think they were referring to what happened over less than a 3-week period. There have been terrible attacks. My goodness, go back to World War II, two nuclear bombs destroying cities. That is super horrendous.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll never see that again. But all of this is wrong. There are better ways to solve problems than by killing people, Gil. We certainly agree on that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we need to get political people to think that way. And it's amazing what they could accomplish if they would think that way. That's the kind of world we both want.
Yes, a world of justice and peace where we're sharing our resources and not exploiting each other.
Oh, absolutely. And there'd be more for all of us. If we all work together, we all can have more. We all can be much more contented. We literally could have that kind of a world. We just have to convince the politicians that they'd be happier with that kind of a system as well. So we keep working on it, Gila, and maybe if enough of us do it, then one day we'll have that world.
I hope so. We need all the help we can get, though.
Oh, indeed. Indeed. I say I'm in the recruiting business. I want other people to get involved because we're doing it for ourselves as well as for others. And it's a wonderful feeling. You can't put a price on it. It's just marvelous.
Yes, I agree. I agree.
Oh, it's been a joy having you on. Again, B'Tselem has been important to me, the work you do and my ability to quote from your work. I know you'll keep doing it. I will keep following it. I will keep quoting you. And it was a joy for me to have somebody from B'Tselem, namely you, to spend an hour with me on air. My great thanks to you, Gila.
And thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure for me.
Oh, thank you, Gila. And join us again tomorrow. We will have another live program, a different topic, another important one. Join us then.